It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Ian and Dan are here with me, and Colin Jeffries here as well, in a segment that is sponsored by Oreck Home Centers throughout the St. Louis area. Not just great vacuum cleaners, but all sorts of stuff to help keep your home clean. Oreck Home Centers, O-R-E-C-K, spells Oreck. Hi, Colin, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Paul?
Good.
That's good.
Last week I introduced you as morphing from news director of KTRS to your alter ego, showbiz boy. And you showed off that ability, that power you have as showbiz boy by doing a great job telling us how big the box office was going to be for various things. Now, last week, you didn't review, but we talked about Paul Blart, Mall Cop.
Mm-hmm.
And what number did you say it would come in at?
20-something, I thought. 24,
yeah,
maybe.
I think. And what did it come in at?
24, 25.
Something
right
like
there.
That. Right on the money.
Right around there.
Showbiz boy, working again.
There we go.
And I didn't go see it yet.
That's why I was off.
I know. I told you.
I had factored in Dan's ticket.
I told you I was going to go see it last week, and I didn't.
No, you were not off. If you said 24, plus or minus 2 million, doesn't matter.
Fair enough.
Okay. It's not like you said 24 and it came in at 6 million.
Yeah.
You were very, very close.
And I wouldn't have paid $2 million for a ticket.
Good call. All right. What do we have on the movie front to review this week? And then we'll get to some showbiz news.
We've got a few... I don't know. They're not small movies, but they're not big movies either.
None of these movies will overtake Furious 7.
No, it's going to be close. This is a down week. Everyone's kind of taking a deep breath before next week.
By the way, did you hear that Vin Diesel announced the release date for Furious 8?
It's April, I believe,
April of
2017.
Yeah, 2 years from now.
Yeah, that's not a shocker. Yeah. $1.2 billion and still climbing.
What are the chances there's a script? Not that you need one for these movies.
No, I bet they've got an idea, because this is sort of some inside baseball, but right before 6, they all signed on for a trilogy, I believe. So this was sort of expected, and I'm certain there was a clause in there to say they could get out in the event of someone's death or something like that, and that happened. But
yeah.
How could you walk away from the inevitable payday?
Right.
Man.
You know, people might say about Vin Diesel, What is he ever going to do besides these movies? What does he ever have to do besides these movies?
He could retire tomorrow.
Yes.
Yeah. From the looks of it, all he does is work out when he's not in movies.
That's
I don't know.
Yeah.
So
they said the same thing about Sylvester Stallone. Okay, besides Rocky and Rambo, what's this guy ever going to do? He doesn't have to do anything else.
Yeah.
He did Stop or My Mom Will Shoot and Oscar and other horrible comedies. And
I thought they were pretty good.
And prove that he doesn't have to do anything else and shouldn't.
No.
Same thing for Vin Diesel.
Yeah, it's... This movie's—it's gonna take over. It's gonna take over the number 5 spot this weekend, and we'll see it. If it has a really good weekend here, it could internationally, it could take over Harry Potter and become the 4th largest movie ever.
Wow!
Whoa! What are there comedies coming out this weekend?
Not that I saw.
Besides Paul Blart.
No, not comedies. This is a chick flick, a sci-fi movie, and I don't know anything about the 3rd movie.
What is it?
I don't even know the name. I know there's a 3rd movie. I can't remember what it is.
Okay.
Is the chick flick a romantic comedy? We'll get to it
because I saw it. I'll review it for you in a couple of minutes. But let's start with the sci-fi movie, which is Ex Machina.
Yeah, and this is a heavy sci-fi movie. Let's look at this. Centers around artificial intelligence and how it will interact with humans, and how, or should humans even dabble in this? Is this inevitable? Sort of the implications of man's creation becoming smarter, better. How will it interact? It's we see a lot of artificial intelligence in movies. Avengers has one, the first one. Jarvis, the little guy Iron Man talks to. A couple years ago, we saw Spike Jones with Her, where the operating system is artificially intelligent. Blade Runner, we saw decades ago. We've seen this. But we haven't seen anything that takes it on in a very serious light, I think, in a good way, in quite some time. And that's what this movie is really about. It's just interesting to look at, because Avengers Age of Ultron centers around an artificial intelligence gone awry. And I don't think you could have two movies that approach it from more completely different angles than this.
Would the Terminator movies qualify as artificial intelligence?
They would. And actually, I was going to mention the Terminator movies as we talked about this, because the implications always of artificial intelligence, how will humans survive it? Will the machines just decide that humans are irrelevant, that they can do it better and kill us all, like mm-hmm. Skynet and Terminator? Or will we manage to coexist? Will they just want to become a part of humanity closer to Blade Runner? And that's where we sit with Ex Machina.
Yeah.
And this, if you can't, I really like this movie quite a bit. And we'll sort of... I worry there may be some difference of opinion on this one, but for a plot, let's begin there. There's a character, Caleb. I cannot Alex. I'm going to get the actor's name wrong. Dom Hall Gleason. That's it. If you saw Unbroken, you saw him in there.
He was also in a movie a few years ago, a nice little indie movie called About Time.
That was very good.
Yeah,
I really liked that. But he plays a coder at a Google-type search company,
mm-hmm.
and he wins a raffle, a competition, to get to visit the owner of the company. His name is Nathan, played by...
The visionary genius behind the company.
Exactly. The Elon Musk-type character who is experimenting with all of this. He gets an opportunity to visit his home. It's played by Oscar Isaac, who I really liked in
Inside Llewyn Davis,
and then also A Most Violent Year. I think he's on the upswing of sort of his career. He's also in Star Wars coming up this winter. And once Caleb arrives at Nathan's home, he realizes something is amiss.
You should point out that it is an isolated home in a yes. valley that no one is allowed to come close to. The helicopter that delivers him drops him off in the field where you can't even see the home. Mm-hmm. And the helicopter pilot just says, okay, to get there, you just follow this river.
It felt very sort of Jurassic Park-y
yes, it did.
To me, where it's like, here you go. There's clearly something dangerous or forbidden. So I'm leaving you here. This is where my job ends. Good luck.
Yeah.
And he arrives at this home, and Caleb meets Nathan, and they sort of talk, and he explains that he's actually here to perform sort of an in-person Turing test on an artificial intelligence. Now, Turing test was created by Alan Turing, who, if you saw Imitation Game, they briefly touched on it. But the idea is, can a machine trick a human or pass as a human in a conversation, interacting with humans? And that's what he's brought this character, Caleb, here to do, is to interact with his artificial intelligence, Ava. And this is the setup for the film.
Mm-hmm.
And you're sort of left questioning who's good, who's bad, are there ulterior motives?
Ava is an attractive android.
Yes. I really like the way that they portrayed her on screen. And she's clearly humanoid, but they don't cover her in skin. She's got this sort of eerie, translucent, synthetic skin. Mm-hmm. And the idea is so that you always remember that she's a machine.
Yeah, it's a good effect.
It's eerie. Like, you can't explain it. I've never seen anything like it, but it's really interesting to look at. It's almost like the air shimmers around her.
Right.
But it's sort of the examination of what happens when you have a... Is this truly an artificial intelligence? Can it pass this Turing test? How do humans interact with it who are sort of unaware? And kind of goes on from there. It explores very complex themes throughout all of this with how would you interact with this? What were your thoughts on it? I mean, I
hated this movie.
Why did you hate this movie?
Well, maybe hate is the bad word. I didn't like this movie.
Okay.
And part of the problem is that there are two big twists in the movie. I guessed both of them the first time that character appeared on the screen. I'm not going to say anything more because I don't want to give it away for people who are going to see it. But you've seen it and you know what I'm talking
yes.
about. I knew it. The moment that character appeared on the screen, I knew it. And I kind of knew where the story was heading. Here's the thing about it. Again, without giving away too much of the movie, and certainly not giving away the ending of the movie, this character that Oscar Isaac plays, this isolated super genius who runs his company, who's developed these things, what's wrong? It's almost like he's treated as an evil genius in this movie. And I'm going to ask you, what's wrong with what he's doing? Let's say he's just out there in the middle of the woods, miles away from anybody else, and he's essentially making the most high-tech sex toys, sex robots that have ever been seen on the planet. I'm not saying that's the plot of the movie, but let's say that he's doing that. Okay, why would we care, and why would we be interested in that?
I don't know that he views, I don't know that he views himself as not entirely evil. This, he doesn't view himself, I don't think, in purely altruistic terms. He's trying to create this device that he is wary of. It's in the middle of nowhere, his house. You have to have a key card to access all these rooms in
when
the house.
When Domhnall Gleeson's character Caleb talks to Ava, mm-hmm. they're separated by plexiglass. She
yes.
has an environment that she lives in. He has an environment that he's forced to live in, and they are not allowed to even touch.
And it sort of discusses, there's a scene where it goes back over, she's not the first creation of his.
Yes.
And it explores what's happened to these previous creations, and it shows you, and he's aware that this could get away from him. This technology could escape what he understands about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is sort of twisty and turny. I'm not saying that it's not like a huge, you know, sixth sense thing where I didn't see that coming the first time.
See, that's the problem with the movie, because I think once you get to the ending, you were supposed to say, wow, I didn't see that coming at all. I saw it coming 8 minutes into that character appearing on the screen.
Yeah, I definitely understand what you're saying, but I placed more emphasis on the closing shot. And I'm not going to say anything else more than that,
yeah.
other than I think that was the ending, sort of.
Here's another problem I have with this movie. Remember last week I reviewed True Story with James Franco and Jonah Hill?
Yeah, great setup, but it never went anywhere.
Correct. And my complaint about it was, after that great setup, most of the movie was two people sitting in a room talking to each other.
Mm-hmm. This is very heavy on that.
This movie is two people, sometimes it's these two people, sometimes it's those two people, sitting in a room or standing in a room, talking to each other. And while what they're talking about might be mildly interesting to advance the plot, is not nearly enough in the compelling department to make you want to stick through this movie. If this movie were on cable or I were watching it streaming on Netflix at home, I would have turned it off halfway through.
And that's what sort of is going to hamstring this. This has a very limited audience. Avengers and these movies like this, these Terminators, they can approach ideas like this. Or if you watch Person of Interest on TV, they can approach these ideas of what happens when humanity's creations outpace humans. And they do it in a fun, there's lots of explosions and things like that to distract you from it. This is really...
has none of that.
It's none of that.
None of the
all.
Interesting
this
stuff
is a
you've
very,
seen.
Philosophical sort of examination of this, and
yeah.
and that's why I liked it, because it was quiet and it pared back everything.
If you ever thought to yourself, I would really like to sit down and enjoy an hour-long android therapy session,
there you go.
That's what this movie is.
I can understand that, but again, I liked that it was slow and different.
Were you surprised at the end?
Not super. No.
Okay.
No is the best answer. No, I wasn't surprised, but I watch a lot of movies,
okay.
So it's like that's part of it too. I think if I were watching this with friends of mine, they would have been more surprised. But you know how it is, Paul. We watch a lot of movies.
Yeah, I know.
A lot of movies
yeah.
over the course
And
of
I'm
year.
Recommending that people not watch this one. I'm giving it a 2.
Oh, see, I'm on the opposite end. I gave it an 8. I
okay.
really enjoyed it. This is an early front runner for me. This is one of my favorite movies of the
wow,
year.
Wow, really?
Yeah. I've never it's been It's really been a long time since I've seen something sort of this quiet dealing with robots and all this. It takes away all of that. So if you want to see something that's kind of a thinker, that's the way I look at it. This is your movie.
What does Showbiz Boy say it'll do with the box office?
Man, this is a big one. This was in 39 theaters last week and had a really good sort of per theater average. It's got a lot of buzz going into it because critics agree with me more than you.
I know. That's okay.
It's fine.
I'll be the outlier.
So that's good. Let's say 12 million, but that's a strong weekend for it. This is a weird weekend for films.
If it does 12 million, I'm predicting a big drop off because there ain't going to be word of mouth on this thing. And if there is, it ain't going to be good. I think more people are going to agree with me.
Probably.
The other movie that came out or is coming out opening today that is going to get some buzz is a movie called The Age of Adeline, which would be the most recent chick flick. And the good news is Nicholas Sparks has nothing to do with it. And I say that as a guy. I took my wife to go see this chick flick at the screening the other night, and I didn't hate it. In case you haven't already seen from the multiple interviews that Blake Lively, the star, has been doing lately, she plays Adeline, who is a woman who at age 29 is involved in a car accident and something supernatural happens to her in that car accident. And from that moment on, she never ages a day. She never has the ravages of age. And it's not that she stays in a 29-year-old body, but her brain gets older. And, you know, eventually she's 100 years old and can't remember anything, but she still has a 29-year-old body. No, no part of her is affected by aging. And she remains that 29-year-old woman forever, or at least until she dies. Now, the problem, if you're that kind of a character, is can you have a relationship with somebody? By the time she has this accident at 29 years old, she already has a daughter. Her daughter continues to age. She does not. So eventually her daughter catches up with and passes her. And in fact, for much of the movie, her daughter is played by 82-year-old actress Ellen Burstyn. Blake Lively, whoa, 29, her daughter, 82-year-old Ellen Burstyn. This might sound a little bit Benjamin Button-like to you, but in that movie, he is, Brad Pitt's character, Benjamin Button, is aging in reverse from 100 years old down to zero. In this one, she doesn't age at all, but her character's life is kind of like Benjamin Button in that she can't really develop any kind of relationship. I mean, if she falls in love with a guy, he's going to notice in a couple of years that he's gotten older and she hasn't. In 10 years, he would certainly know it. In 20 years, how come you haven't aged a day? You have no wrinkles on your face. You have.
Wouldn't the guy like that, though?
Many guys would like to have a 29-year-old. But if you have a partner who you're really in love with and you're going to want to grow old with, eventually you're going to grow older than she will, and she's going to have to look around for somebody else, which is exactly her problem. Besides the fact that when you're 29 forever, people are going to wonder about you at work. Five years went by. How come it's still your happy birthday to you? You're 29. Last year you were 29. Before that you were 29.
Most women are like that, though.
they wish. And so Adeline has to kind of keep moving around. Every 10 years she picks up from wherever she is and starts a new identity and a new life somewhere else. Now, again, that's a nice setup to a movie, but this is a chick flick, so eventually there has to be a romantic interest, and there is one. I can't remember the actor's name, but it's nobody you've ever heard of before, and he gets involved with her, and she is resistant to it at all because she knows by this time she's over 100 years old, but still is a 29-year-old, and she knows that she can't really get involved, but she also kind of starts falling for him. And then he takes her to meet her parents, who are played by Kathy Baker and Harrison Ford. And now there's another twist to the story that comes up there, which I won't reveal. And it all plays out kind of nicely, I will tell you. This is the kind of movie where not just women will go see this, but if you're a guy and your wife drags you along to see The Age of Adeline, I don't think you're going to walk out of there and be mad at her for having seen this movie, with one exception. This movie has a narrator who is completely unnecessary. And I think they made the movie and then felt, you know what, we've got to put some narration in here, because it's not any of the characters narrating it. It's not like Morgan Freeman narrating Shawshank Redemption, but he's a character in the movie. Or any other movie with a narrator who's telling you, the first time I met Adeline. It's none of that. It's a kind of voice of God kind of character telling you the Adeline story and giving you inside detail on what happens on the night of her car crash that changes her body molecularly and all that. You don't need that. You don't care about that. If you buy the premise, you buy the movie. You don't have to have the premise explained to you. All you need to know is, okay, she doesn't age. I got it. Now we're going to see how that complicates her life and how she deals with that as she ages.
This isn't like Spider-Man getting his powers. We don't need to see the spider biting his hand.
But even then, you didn't have somebody as a voiceover saying, the spider contains venom that is nuclear active, radioactive, and the chromosome, at the chromosomal level. That's what you have in this movie. Oh, there's that kind of narration at the accident. And later on, in another key scene in the movie, the narrator is there again explaining this and talking about her life. And completely unnecessary and almost ruined the movie for me. In fact, when I walked out, somebody there from the movie company asked me, okay, Paul, what's your review? And I said, I liked it, but the narration almost killed it for me. So I can't give this a full really good recommendation, but I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10. I know that a lot of people are not going to like this movie, but there are going to be plenty who will. And I think as a chick flick, it's okay. It's bearable for a guy as a chick flick, as opposed to anything with the words Nicholas Sparks or Jane Austen attached to them, which I would not see with a gun to my head.
But it's not a comedy at all.
No. There's nothing funny in this movie.
Okay.
It is a romance. It's not a romantic comedy. Good question, though. It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Ian and Dan are here with me. Colin Jeffrey here for our Showbiz Hour, which we do every Friday at this time. He liked Ex Machina. I did not. He did not see Age of Adeline. I did. Kind of recommended it. I do want to mention one other thing about Ex Machina, which Oscar Isaac is in. You mentioned that he was in Inside Llewyn Davis, a movie you loved last year, a movie I hated last year. So it's not surprising that we would find ourselves on opposite
sides of
this
one. And A Most Violent
Year
you saw, didn't you?
I watched it this week on Netflix and turned it off halfway through.
You didn't like it at all.
I did not like it. And I decided I don't like him. I think
it's him.
He's obviously a carrier. But
carrier.
I did want to tell you a movie that I also watched this week online, which I don't remember actually coming out in movie theaters in 2013. It's a movie directed by Steven Soderbergh called Side Effects. Did that play in our area?
Yes, it did.
Did you see it?
No, I think it bombed.
It must have. But I'm going to tell you about it because I liked it. Rooney Mara plays a woman who's married to Channing Tatum. He is away in prison for 4 years for insider trading. He was a hotshot on Wall Street. He's just coming home. Now, while he was away, she developed some pretty severe depression issues. And when he comes home, they don't go away. And one day she's in the parking garage of the apartment building they live in, and she gets in her car, and she rams the car at full speed into the wall. Airbag deploys, the whole thing. The car's totaled. She ends up in the hospital. The hospital assigns a psychiatrist to go talk to her to find out why would a woman do something like this. And that psychiatrist is played by Jude Law. Jude Law investigates. She's obviously got depression issues. He puts her on Zoloft. Nah, that doesn't work so well for her. He puts her on another antidepressant. And by the way, for people who have mental health issues, this is not uncommon. Psychiatrists will do this all the time. Put a patient on one thing, see if it works. If it doesn't, try another one. If it doesn't, try another one. Eventually, they maybe get to the right thing. I went through the same thing with allergy medication. But it's even worse for people who have depression issues. So after a while, Rooney Mara says to Jude Law, the patient says to the doctor, maybe you should talk to my ex-therapist, who's played by Catherine Zeta-Jones. And so she's appearing at some conference somewhere, and Jude Law goes and meets her, and they talk about the Rooney Mara character. And she says, yeah, I really never found the right medication for her, but I do have a colleague who is starting to put patients on this drug called Ablixa. Ablixa is a fictional drug. In the movie, it's a real drug, but in real life, there's no such thing. They talk about it, and Jude Law says, well, okay, we need to try something else. I'll put you on this. And from that moment on, things go a little bit haywire. She starts acting completely differently, and the hole keeps getting a little bit deeper. And that's where the psychological thriller aspect of this comes in. And I have to stop right there when I tell you about this plot, because if I told you any more about where this movie's going, I would ruin it for you. But you don't see where it's going from that opening segment. You don't see what's going to happen and then what happens after that and what happens after that and what happens after that. It is very clever. Steven Soderbergh, I think, is one of our best directors. I like the way he shoots movies. This one is not shot too darkly like a couple of other things he's done. But it's really intriguing. Those four main characters are all very good. The people who are around them are also very good. He shoots it in an interesting directorial way that doesn't distract from the story at all. And you get drawn into these characters, her character, and particularly Jude Law's character, about what happens to them. The effect, the side effect of giving a patient these antidepressant drugs and what happens if things go a little bit off the rails with that patient and the blowback it can have for both the patient and the doctor. It's really well told. I'm giving it an 8 out of 10.
Okay.
It's called Side Effects. It's streaming now.
Netflix?
On Netflix, and I'm sure on Amazon Instant Video. I recommend it.
Okay.
If you get a chance, you may want to check it out. Side Effects.
I can do that.
What other showbiz stuff you got for us?
Adam Sandler is working on the first of his movies under that Netflix deal. Those movies he's working on that will go directly to Netflix.
He signed a 6-picture deal. And by the way, at the bottom of the contract, it says, we know Paul will never watch any of these.
Well, we may not get to see any of them based on the turmoil coming out of the filming of Ridiculous 6 is what it's called.
Uh-oh.
It's a send-up of Magnificent 7 because that's a movie you want to take on.
Dun, 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 dun. One of the greatest movie themes ever.
Yeah, and really a good movie. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. So he decided, you know what, let's do this. And part of the plot inevitably involves Native Americans. Well, about a dozen of the extras and actors that they had working on the show, Native American actors, walked off the set this week.
Whoa.
Yes, because it was racist, they said, and grossly misrepresented Apache culture.
Wow.
Yeah. This is, now, some of it is just you have to accept that there's a certain level of, like, cultural deference that needs to be applied here. Like, you can't just say all Indians are the same. That would be like saying all white people are from the same place, and there's different countries and cultures.
Yeah.
And so they were supposed to be portraying Apache, but they said these costumes were not even near right. They were closer to Comanche.
Oh, come on. What? Really? That's why you walk off the set?
Well, and then some of the names that they gave the Native Americans, the Indians, one of the women's character was called Beaver's Breath. And so there was, you can guess where Adam Sandler took that joke.
Yeah. It's an Adam Sandler movie.
You had to expect it to be stupid.
Yeah,
no.
I think their issue is they were told this is a comedy. It's not going to be racist. Come do this. Because some people initially said no to this. And then they get there and they're like, we're just sort of playing what they called Hollywood Indians. Nothing has really changed. There's no.
It's an Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah.
If I may quote my friend Dan Strauss.
Yes, thank you.
Who's in this besides Adam Sandler? Because I want to compare the Ridiculous Six to the Magnificent Seven.
Rob Schneider.
Of course, it's the only thing. And David Spade. They have to be in it, right?
Yeah.
I'm actually not certain who's in this at all.
Go to IMDb on your laptop.
Will Forte
is
in this. Oh, gosh. Taylor Lautner, Terry Crews, Steve Buscemi, Danny Trejo.
Oh, Steve Buscemi, yep.
Oh,
Rob
Steve
Schneider, David Spade, Nick Nolte, Steve Zahn. This is a huge cast.
Nick Nolte?
Nick Nolte, Whitney Cummings.
Okay.
And Nick Chris Nolte, Parnell. Man. Probably the last name you'll recognize.
Chris Parnell from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. So
Dr.
This
Spaceman from 30 Rock.
Spaceman. I forgot about that.
Wow. It's spelled spaceman, but it's pronounced Spaceman.
Spaceman.
You know what would have been nice, though, if they would have, the production staff and everyone, would have taken what those people were saying about the
Native Americans.
The Native Americans saying about the garb, the stuff that they're wearing and everything, and then changed it.
Yeah. Made changes.
Right.
Now, I don't know that they were given the option to do this or if they just walked off, but it's very funny because now if you search this, the movie is now tagged on IMDb and others with the plot keywords Native American stereotype, racist stereotype, and racial stereotype. So
it's an Adam Sandler movie.
All the markings of a great comedy right there.
I'm not going to see it, but that's what I would expect from it.
Yes. So
here's the cast of the original Magnificent Seven in 1960. Talk about generation difference. Yul Brynner, Steve McQueen, Charles Bronson, Eli Wallach, Robert Vaughn, James Coburn.
Wow. Wow.
I know. Oh, wait a second. They're remaking it. Oh, of course they are. Oh, no.
That's right.
Here's the remake. This is going to be out in 2 years, directed by Antoine Fuqua, who worked with Denzel Washington on Training Day and a couple of other movies. Vincent D'Onofrio, Chris Pratt, Denzel Washington, Ethan Hawke, Luke Grimes, and nobody else I've ever heard of. So I guess it's going to be a Denzel Washington movie, and he's the guy who kind of is the Yul Brynner leader of the pack. in the new Magnificent. A movie, by the way, that should not be remade. One of those classic movies, like The Great Escape.
Well, you could make the argument that it was a remake. I mean, it really was. It was a Western take on The Seven Samurai, but they should have ended it after those two.
Yeah.
I think they're both very good. They're both different. But, yeah. Just one other thing. ABC announced a while back that they were bringing the Muppets back. Well, now we know a few more details, and I'll just... I don't know what you'll think about this. It is going to be shot in a mockumentary style and is going to deal with the Muppets and their relationships, their life away from the show. It's going to be shot, they said, sort of like 30 Rock or The Office, and it's going to be more adult. They said adults will want to watch this, but it'll be all right for kids.
All right.
I don't know how I feel about them bringing it back and then trying to say, oh, we're going to make The Office with Miss Piggy and Kermit's love issues.
You know, it's been so long since I watched The Muppet Show. Is it even in reruns anywhere?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
No, but did you see either of the Muppet movies?
No, not the recent ones.
You should watch the first one. It was pretty good. The second one wasn't great, but
I just think I got over The Muppets years ago.
Okay.
But, well, I mean, if it turns out to be good and you tell me I should check it out, I will, but I'm not all that excited about
Fozzie's
it.
Fozzie's a great actor.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Works nude, too.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
The Swedish chef has such depth.
Oh, that's another thing.
The chef.
That's another thing we forgot to mention about X. We forgot to mention about Ex Machina. Don't go see that movie if you're offended by full frontal female nudity.
No, don't go see that. There we go.
It sounds like a dance, too, the name of the movie.
Ex Machina.
Yeah, line dance.
Or full frontal female nudity.
Yeah, that's a good line
dance.
They're
opening for you guys this weekend, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
And speaking of TV, CBS is going to be doing a 90-minute primetime special called David Letterman, A Life on Television. It's going to air a week from Monday, hosted by Ray Romano, who got his TV start on Letterman's show. Letterman's company produced Everybody Loves Raymond. Letterman is doing his last late show on Wednesday, May 20th, so this will be 2 weeks before that. And I wonder how they're going to be able to do David Letterman's life on television without NBC saying, yes, you can show some of the clips of when he was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's be honest, what has David Letterman done in this century that anybody said, did you see what Letterman did last night?
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, except for the day he came back after 9/11 or the day he came back from his heart attack or any of that sort of stuff. On a regular Tuesday, does anybody say, did you see Letterman last night? Nobody ever says that. They might say that about Fallon.
They say, did you see it on YouTube? They don't even say, did you see it
last
night?
But not even that.
No. I'm saying Fallon. That's the other way.
I don't know
anyone that watches.
Do you know anybody who posts clips of Letterman or has for the last several years?
No.
Or why you would subscribe to their channel, no.
If you want to talk about the great years of David Letterman, that would be 1982 to 1992 when he was on NBC, changing the paradigm of late-night television.
Yep.
But how is CBS going to do a lifetime of David Letterman on television without the rights to those clips? And I would bet you NBC won't part with them. Why would they want to help promote the competition? They never have.
I don't.
Now, the only interesting thing I'm looking forward to in the slow goodbye to David Letterman is will Jay Leno appear in the guest chair?
I hope so.
That will be must-see TV.
Time to bury the hatchet.
That'll be the one that people are saying the next day, did you see Letterman and Leno last night? But that's about it. All right, Colin, we'll see you in the newsroom in a few minutes.
Thank you.